your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I'm chatting in this segment with Chris Temple, founder and editor of The National Investor, and I think well known to all of you, our listeners, as Chris joins me regularly throughout the week. I did want to bring Chris on this weekend show, though, because we're not going to focus, well, at all on kind of day-to-day movements of these markets. I want to take a bigger picture look at the currency system and our overall financial system. Because, Chris, I think it was about a week and a half ago that I had a discussion with somebody saying that, look at all the debt that's in the U.S. and it's finally going to matter now. And with all the easiness and all the money printing that the Fed is doing, it's going to lead to a dollar collapse. The end of the U.S. dollar being the world reserve currency, this whole saying of the death of the dollar is going to be here, all thanks, again, to central bank easiness and the economy essentially crashing or being shut down. But I didn't take that view. I took the view that you need to compare what's going on with all these other central banks. And quite frankly, I've heard time and time again that the financial system is going to collapse and the dollar is not going to be looked at the same way that it has been over the last, well, really, century. What are your thoughts when you hear this argument of the death of the dollar?
Well, as I have told people numerous times, any of these Pied Pipers of the Gold Bug Echo Chamber or other scaremongers that are out there telling you these same things today, Corey, that the U.S. dollar is going to get dumped by the rest of the world because the Fed's printing too much money. It's going to cause gold to go to the moon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Don't walk away, run, because they have utterly no idea how currency markets and markets generally work in the year 2020. The best I can say is that they are, it's like they fell asleep in 1980 or else they got into a tricked out DeLorean and they set the flux capacitor for the year 2020 and poof, they're dumped in 2020 and they see the Fed printing all this money and oh gee, that means that the world's going to dump the dollar is going to go in the toilet. I just sent you a chart showing that the value of the trade weighted dollar has spiked higher because of all of the upheaval of the recent past and is now at its highest level since the mid-1980s, folks. And that's because in relative terms, the dollar is the best of a bad lot. It's the most liquid of a bad lot. And if anything, what is going to cause people to go away from the dollar, and you're hearing some of these things today, like we heard in the wake of the 2008 financial crisis, where for a spell you had a spike higher in the U.S. dollar, that's killing everybody. Because the world over, you've got somewheres between $10 and $15 trillion between governments and corporations and various other entities of dollar-denominated debt that is increasingly harder to service these days with what's going on in the world, let alone ever pay off. So it is not a weaker. Look, Corey, if the U.S. dollar did start to go down in value, you would have global markets cheering, not saying like they are right now with the dollar higher and on a trade-weighted basis, its highest in a very, very long time, saying that this strong dollar is killing us. So, you know, some of these discussions, kind of like were frozen in the late 70s or around 1980, are just totally ass backwards versus how the world works today.
Now, what about even a step further than this? And I know we're going away from both what you and I think is actually happening and going to happen, but the collapse of the financial system going to maybe some asset-backed currency.
Well, look, there's a lot of different things being discussed, all right? And I have said for a long time now that when the end comes for the dollar as the world's reserve currency, it is likely to be, number one, because we had a monstrous spike that choked off growth and threw the world into a depression first, number one. Number two, it's going to be a part of the move that is already underway away from globalization to where the dollar may continue to have hegemony in our hemisphere, but in other parts of the world, you may have the Chinese yuan one day. I don't know if what's left of the euro will survive in Europe, but at least in that context, it probably will, etc. So I don't know that you're going to have one single overarching currency take its place in academic circles and in market circles, because that's all those people worry about. Yeah, you've got a lot of talk again, and again, largely because of the dollar strength, over having some kind of overarching asset-based currency. You got the usual suspects with their nonsense of, you know, the IMF's special drawing rights are going to replace the dollar. Again, run away from people like that. Don't walk, run. But, you know, I think you're going to have a more disjointed situation. And finally, and I'll throw this in, lest anybody wonder where I'm coming from and my motivation, it won't bother me the least. I will be the first to lead a party and dance on a dollar's grave when that time comes that the dollar does not hold overall sway in the world, not because it's going to make gold go up. And frankly, when that day comes, it is going to be brutal for U.S. citizens and consumers who will see their standard of living deteriorate rapidly if the dollar is not the world's reserve currency. But the good part of it is chances for peace breaking out in the world will be much better if the dollar is not the world's reserve currency. And that's a whole different discussion.
That is a very different discussion, but it does tie in. And I think that's a key to understand. That's one of the things that I'm, in a way, not hoping for, this whole death of the dollar or even death of the financial system, because, yeah, it's people in North America that our lives are going to change drastically and not for the better, as much as you hate big government. And hey, I'm in that boat too. I do not like big gov, but fact of the matter is, if the death of the dollar does happen, our way of life is going to change a lot. Now, one thing that has really brought up this discussion is central banks and their move now to even easier monetary policy, really for an indefinite period of time. But you also sent me this chart that outlines central bank balance sheets as a percent of GDP. As much as people want to focus on the Fed and why the Fed printing money is going to hurt the dollar, yada, 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 all these other central banks are printing money arguably to a greater extent. And you look at the Bank of Japan, the ECB, they have much higher percentages of central bank balance sheets than GDP. How does this all factor into your outlook?
Well, and again, and that's the point. You know, I listened to a guy the other day give a presentation. And again, it's like he was stuck, you know, in the late 70s or around 1980, which was a very, very different world. In the 70s, you know, when the U.S. was the first major economy out of the box to go to a totally fiat currency unbacked by anything. And historically, we know that that, you know, pivotal time came when President Nixon closed the gold window. Now, up to that point, the average American had no ability to turn in their Federal Reserve notes for gold, but for international accounts to be settled, there was an ability on the part of foreign investors and central banks to swap, quote, paper dollars, for simplicity's sake, for gold. And too many of them started doing it and basically called the Fed's bluff in those days to the, you know, Charles de Gaulle famously threatened to, you know, lead a global run on the Fed, and for a while actually started to do that, to the point where Nixon had to close the gold window and say, forget it, we don't have the gold, you know, now we're changing the rules, we're going to have a totally fiat currency, gold is no longer a monetary asset as far as the central government is concerned. That's when gold went back to a market-oriented asset in 1971, and we know what's happened since then. Now, what was the case, Corey, in the 70s, is that it was basically the U.S. was the only one doing that. And so that's why when everybody else was still in relative terms, especially running far sounder currency policies than the U.S. suddenly was, that's why the dollar in the 70s went down. That's why inflation went up. That's why interest rates later went up and so forth. But today, everybody else is doing it better than we are. You know, but through the end of March, the Fed's balance sheet, which we all know has popped up again recently, was, and I'll use round numbers, you know, to account for what's going on in April, it was about 30%, 31% of GDP. The European Central Bank is pushing 50% of GDP. The Bank of Japan is well over 100% of GDP, its balance sheet, and all the money it's printed. So in relative terms, you know, the dollar is the best of a bad lot. And as I was talking to a colleague recently, when he was telling me the same thing you just did, he was trying to have a friendly discussion slash argument with someone with the same pitch. You know, the Fed's going to print so much money, the dollar is going to crash. And in fact, the opposite is actually happening right now. Hopefully we have time to talk about that. But this guy's response to his friend was the same as I say. What is the dollar going to go down against when we're talking at least where fiat currencies are concerned? Now, as we've seen, the dollar will continue to go down against gold, less so than some other currencies, perhaps, for the most part. But as far as other currencies and this really dopey idea that people are peddling, again, some mean well, some it's the same old sales pitch of the world's going to dump dollars. No, again, the world is being choked by the strong dollar right now, which is still in very short supply in some ways. There's a very large global short position, effectively, of dollars. What would help the rest of the world and take the steam out of the renewed calls for the dollar to be replaced in one form or another is if the Fed were really to go nuts, add another zero to all of the quantitative easing, and push that dollar value back down, you know, notably. That would take the pressure off everyone. But I continue to say, for a lot of reasons, Corey, that if there is a surprise move to come in the near term for the dollar, it's going to be a spike higher that's going to rip people's face off and take everybody by surprise.
Well, I think even recently that is showing. The dollar has been moving higher, selling off a little bit at the end of the week. But hey, this dollar has been a lot stronger than all of these bears have wanted it to be. One other aspect of this argument, though, does deal with debt. And, well, debt, obviously, it is an issue. Debt just continues to grow. But again, my argument is this is a comparison game. And it seems like all these other countries are growing debt equally as fast. I know that's not the actual case, but everyone's growing debt. So why all of a sudden now is debt going to cause the collapse of the system?
Well, it's not per se. You know, the reason why interest rates have been compressed to nothing, and in some cases less than nothing, the European Central Bank with its new credit facility is loaning money to commercial banks at minus 1% this week. So, you know, when you look at the mathematics of how a fractional reserve system works, as I've discussed numerous times, you get to this place where more and more debt being issued and taken on gives you less and less traction as far as actual economic activity is concerned. It's why we need the system to be radically overhauled. And there's going to be several different elements as to how that is going to be done someday. But as far as maintaining the status quo, yeah, there's going to be a lot of new debt issued. That's the problem. We should be issuing, in my opinion at least, social credit apart from the Federal Reserve. The people should not have to be borrowing their own, quote, wealth and earning power and et cetera. That's, again, a different discussion for a different day. But, you know, as far as the debt is concerned, look, if you and I were talking 40 years ago, Corey, the U.S. government's debt was approaching its first $1 trillion. The dollar was going down. Interest rates and inflation were up in double digits. If I had told you that in 40 years that debt would go from $1 trillion to $25 trillion and be growing at its fastest rate ever, yet, the stock market will be 25 or so times higher. Inflation will be a fraction of what it was then. Interest rates will be a fraction of what they were, and people would be fighting over buying 30-year government debt at 1% or 2%. You'd have called Happy Acres and had him send the rubber truck for me. So going from $1 trillion to $25 trillion of debt hasn't cooked our gooses quite yet. I don't know how much farther we're going to go, but even though it means the stratification of wealth and a lot of other things because of the way our system is, they can keep Wall Street and these credit markets alive a lot longer than most people thought. And there were some smart people back in that day, you know, in the late 70s and into the early 80s, who were warning that the U.S. was about to go the way of the so-called banana republics in those days, the Latin American countries with triple and quadruple digit inflation rates. But the Fed figured out, none too soon, how to have the massive inflation that had to come not translate into Main Street type inflation as people thought it would. But that is where we've had the hyperinflation on and off since that time, in asset valuations of different kinds, in debt levels of different kinds, etc. One of these days, Humpty Dumpty won't be able to be put back together. But this has gone on for a lot longer than people thought. And again, to wrap it up, dollar-denominated debt in comparison to the rest of the world is not the first thing people should be looking at when they question the long-term health of the dollar. It's actually much stronger than the other currencies and is likely to remain that way for a while, if not get a lot stronger, especially if these quasi-recoveries we've had in stock markets and stuff don't hold. We go into a weaker economic time, then you're going to have a horrible doom loop of people scrambling for liquidity. The dollar goes up, that causes more stress and more scrambling for liquidity, that causes scarcer dollars to go up even more, etc.
All right, Chris, we're wrapping it up there. I enjoy having these conversations, especially with you, and sharing them on the weekend show, because as I mentioned, day over day, we do focus a lot on short-term market moves, trying to take a longer-term perspective, but these overarching themes are critical. And hey, as I mentioned a couple weeks ago, there were a lot of comments that came in, so I wanted to get you on the show and get your take on all of this. So hey, I hope this clears it up. I know a lot of our listeners don't agree with this outlook, but curious to read over all of those comments as well. Chris, thanks for taking time on this weekend show. Have a great rest of your weekend.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.